Merkez Sahaba Online.
Yes, sir, the time of the morning where we join our very own member of Parliament, Ahmad Mansoor Sheikh Imam. He is the president or the leader of the NFP. Ahmad Mansoor Sheikh Imam, assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. And tell me, how are you doing this fine, beautiful Sunday morning?
Wa alaikum salam wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. Alhamdulillah, mashallah, day in the city of Durban. I thought of you this morning, Brother Shafiq, particularly with the mince and methi. Indeed, what a sumptuous meal. What a lovely, wholesome meal.
Oh, you lucky guy. You must have had it with lime pickle, eh? And a lovely soft roti. And a nice hot chai. Ah, that's the way to go, Ahmad. That's the way to go. I'm looking at warning signs all over. And this thing here says, right in front of me, it says, warning N2 highway, East Run, Mpumalanga. It says the N12 highway
N12.
That connects the East Run to the Mpumalanga from about Boksburg through about Witbank. He is definitely not a safe road to travel, and is quite possibly the most dangerous section of the highway, or at least one of the most dangerous section of the highways to travel in South Africa from a potential crime perspective. Recently, there have been numerous attacks on motorists. Ahmed, you've been on a tour guide on these areas. You've seen everything. You know, the East Run seems like it's really, it's sitting on a time bomb. And our good friend, and also he appears on impromptu chat on Coffee Express, Farouk Sarkot, has said, please, this is how he said it. He says, I'm reading it for you. He said, he's giving me a lot of superlative. He says, Captain General Sheikh Shafaat Khan Saab, please address this issue with the firebrand. I'm Member of Parliament, Ahmad Mansoor Sheikh Imam. Ahmad, perhaps, Farouk is listening and millions others. Give us a rundown on the potential of the East Run sitting literally on a time bomb, Ahmad.
Yes, indeed. Jazakallah for those comments, Brother Farouk Sarkar. Yes, indeed. I think we have a serious situation, particularly on that N12. Hijacking is a problem there. Protest is other acts of criminality. It's a no-go area, I can tell you, to some extent. But I can reassure the brother that, yes, the matter is receiving attention. I have subsequently spoken to the provincial commissioner when he brought it through my attention. And the matter is receiving priority. And again, tomorrow, once again, I will make sure that I raise it with all the other stakeholders to address that. The issue of particularly Mpumalanga province and also the area of Benoni, Boksburg, Brakpan, that are also affected with illegal mining as well. That is also receiving attention. Also the area of Rivoli, Bosmont and things. The last final oversight is taking place this week in Rustenburg in the Northwest Province and Klerksdorp. But yes, indeed, I can assure you that this matter is receiving priority and you will be updated on it shortly. Certainly, I can tell you one of the most dangerous national highways in the country. And if you look at the number of incidents that are reported, particularly on that N12, outnumbers any other area in the country currently. Well, Biden is also, it appears that anybody that might be sympathetic to the cause of the Russians, the United States want to attack, and this time it's Biden saying Pakistan is one of the most dangerous, particularly with nuclear arsenal. And as we've discussed the other day, Brother Shafiq, on the issue of the new travel path, and I think we had it absolutely correct that it's more to do with the illicit financial flows, tracking who is going, coming out, how much you're taking, how much you're bringing in, things, more than any means of just checking who's going in and going out. It's more to do with SARS. Well, your dear friend, Mukhweng is entering politics. Though I'm told he did not attend because of being a Sabbath day for him, he decided not to attend the launch. The port strike in Itegwini particularly is causing havoc, Brother Shepherd, but not only the devastating effect on the economy of this country, and I can tell you it's going to affect a whole lot of people because shipping companies are not going to waste their time sailing to the ports in South Africa where they're going to stay here for 20, 30 and 40 days outside the port and they can't even offload. It's costing them money all the time. 30 police officers killed in the last year, financial year on, which is a major, you know, concern. Gauteng particularly has got a serious problem in terms of water. And, you know, it seems like the water rationing is going to come in place. So I think our people need to be mindful of that. Your friend again, DD, says, I'm not in the cold. I'm still very much part and parcel of the succession battle here. So he wants to be part and parcel of it. And yeah, these are just some of the things. You also, of course, load shedding is once again back to some extent. But, you know, like I said, load shedding is here to stay, and it's here to stay for a very, very long time, you know, until we address holistically all the different challenges that we face. But something very, very pertinent that came up the other day, Brother Shaft, and that is the issue of those that did not appear before the TRC, okay, or refused to appear before the TRC and were not granted amnesty. And there was opposition to trying to or attempting to hold them accountable. And that matter is now being raised. And I think it's a very important point that anybody that did not get amnesty must come out and answer for the atrocities that they committed against our people, particularly those that colluded with the apartheid regime during those days and refused to testify. I think, you know, and I remember saying to the president in one of them, and I think it was in the sauna, that if you want to address, you know, the atrocities of the world, let's go back to 1994, pre-1994. Let's start from the even corruption. Let's start pre-1994. Then you'll be able to get to the root of it all. Who benefited unduly? Who sold us out? Who colluded with the apartheid regime? Because remember, there's been lots and lots of allegations.
You know, Ahmed, you are actually stirring the hornet's nest. You're opening up a can of worms. Because I recall clearly it was Terry Lakota who allegedly made this statement in Parliament. And he looked at Cyril Ramaphosa and he said, your father was a policeman in the time of apartheid. He was a spy for the apartheid government. And to some extent, he even pointed fingers at Cyril Ramaphosa saying, you were a spy also. And so in this, you know, Ramaphosa's way, he just knew how to, he went like that. But it seems as if that is going to come to the fore, CR will have to come onto the docks and answer also, Ahmed.
Well, I think it's a very important point, brother. And if you look at the way some of the leaders, particularly in the ruling party, benefited and how they moved from one extreme, earning very little or nothing, to what they are worth today in the country, one needs to, you know, the question that arises is how? How did you move from one extreme to the other, one of poverty to one of billionaire status, you know? And why is it 28 years later, very little or nothing is happening when it comes to addressing the inequalities? We still remain one of the most unequal societies in the world. And so there's a lot of questions that have not been answered. But more importantly, also, those that refused to testify were not granted amnesty. So why have we not brought them to book? And it appears that this was deliberately blocked, any investigation. And I think one of the public prosecuting authorities have now come up on that and raised concerns about that. So I think we need to go back to the drawing board and ask also. And yes, you're correct. Terry Lakota did mention that, in fact, he made serious allegations, pointing fingers directly at the current president.
Yeah, but then we talk about the man that stood the test of time in politics, Prince Gashla Buthelezi. He calls himself many titles, and he, I mean, the Ingonyama Trust, He was the head of the Zulu police and the Zulu government and the Zulu this. But all the time he was talking to the apartheid government in a very, you know, pally way. In that sense, they had a very good relationship, and it made sure that it kept, KZN on a very stable ground, not to attack the apartheid government and so forth. And it seems as if Jacob Zuma himself will have to give a testimony, because some of them even said he quietly was I don't know what they call them in Zulu, spreek for the apartheid government and so forth. I don't know what's going to really happen. Who's going to give evidence against whom? And how would this whole thing work out, Ahmed?
Well, first of all, if you remember that Jacob Zuma repeatedly raises the concern that the day he talks, a whole lot is going to come out. And yes, indeed, he was in charge of intelligence for ANC. He must know what is going on. But very importantly, when it comes to Prince Mangosuthu Buthelezi, there's been serious questions raised about his involvement in the Third Force, or the Dirty Tricks campaign, and the war that took place, where blacks on black violence resulted in tens of thousands of blacks dying. And if you remember that the City Press has reported extensively on that, which prompted the IFP to say we are going to march. And the City Press and others will have nothing of it and say, no, that freedom, we'd allow the person to say what he wants to say. And they were raising questions about the role of Prince Mangosuthu Buthelezi in the civil unrest that took place, the black on black violence. And there were serious allegations that he was working with the apartheid regime. And that he also, the apartheid regime had armed him to be able to take on the ANC particularly. And I can tell you now, you'll get more and more of that as the conflict between the ANC and the IFP hots up at the moment. And you can see almost on a daily basis, they are attacking each other, particularly the ANC attacking the IFP, and have now raised concerns about the serious allegations of corruption that's taking place in the IFP-run municipalities and things. So while they jostle for power and things, you know, that is when, you know, it's when a husband and wife is fighting, and then all the dirty linen comes out. So it's starting to come out right now. So yes, indeed, I think we're going to hear a whole lot more about it. But the fact of the matter is we cannot run away from the truth. That there's been a lot of reports of and allegations of collusion between individuals who are, you know, very influential in society today with the apartheid regime. And many other countries, like Israel was one of them, Switzerland was another one, where, you know, a lot of our resources and things used to be redirected to try and break the sanctions. So, yes, indeed, there have been those. And that is why I repeatedly say that we must not, you know, make it appear that it is the whites only that oppressed us. Many whites supported our struggle, were part and parcel. On the other hand, there were many blacks that sold us out. There's no doubt about that. So I think it's very important that we get to the bottom of it. And who knows, Brother Shepherd, there are a lot of questions that remain unanswered. I mean, if you look at Imam Harun, Ahmed Timol, many of these people that have died, we haven't even got to the real bottom of exactly who, to what extent have been involved. And how do you go on? How do you have closure, Brother Shepherd, if you are not able to deal with these things and get to the bottom of what happened to your loved ones, who played a pivotal role in liberating us? I think it is only fair to them and to the nation that we know who have been the ones that the so-called, what do you call them, pimpies or spies or whatever it is. Those are the things, yeah.
Impimpi, I know the impies. Yeah, the impies can dance properly. The impi, you can see. But I'm looking at a message on the screen here, and Harun says, Assalamu alaikum, Ahmed Manzoor Sheikh Imam Shafa'at. And your man, Lucky, you like so much Shafa'at. I can tell you the show is too hot this morning. But I'd like to add some of my masala. I want to tell Ahmad Manzoor Sheikh Imam that the recent July unrest really showed the tension between the Indians and our Zulus in this part of the world, not forgetting the other populist party under the leadership of Malema, adding more tension. And these tensions manifested in Becky talking lies upon lies, which he must be held accountable for. And another point that I would like to make is Buthelezi himself is a man who sows the seeds of discord. He's always reminding the Indians about the 1949 riots. Please, Ahmad Manzoor Sheikh Imam, next time you see this old man, tell him, keep quiet. Ahmad, Haruni is on fire. We're not on fire. Harun is on fire. Talk, Ahmad.
Well, I must admit that we've missed our brother Harun's calls and his comments. For a while, we haven't had it. But welcome, welcome back. Yes, indeed, I have raised that. I've reminded them, brother Harun, in Parliament. I have repeatedly raised. Let us not forget those blacks that colluded with the apartheid regime, committed atrocities against our own black brothers and sisters, resulting in tens of thousands of them dying. I have raised that time and time again. And I hope they got the message who I'm referring to. But be that as it may, you are correct. It was disgraceful conduct, I must agree with you, by the Minister of Police, who raised eyebrows when he made the statement that, yes, you know, the Indians have massacred the blacks and things of that nature. And then to come back 6 months or 1 year later and say there's no evidence of racism, but it was just criminality. But look at the damage that he has done, you know, in the statement that he has made. And then he comes back and he apologizes. I remember that when we were having a discussion with him on this, and that was at the Chatsworth Police College. And when he said that, I took him on. And he was insistent that it was more to do with racism and we mustn't run away from it. But 6 months later, he comes and he says, no, it's more, it's to do with crime or criminal activities and really not racism. But the damage that he's done has been untold, and you cannot wipe out what he has done because you've created that perception in the minds of these people. Now, remember that many blacks, particularly in KwaZulu-Natal, And I must say, particularly in KwaZulu-Natal, you know, they forget one thing, that just as they suffered, the Indian community suffered. Indian men, when Indian community came to this country, they lived under most horrendous conditions. They had nothing, Brother Shafan. They strived. They put emphasis on education. They built schools. They slept on the floor. They made sacrifices where one sibling had to give up everything to go out there and go and work to ensure that the others go and get educated and things. We made a lot of sacrifices. The difference is this: you give an Indian man or a woman a business, they will make it successful and open two and three other branches. But that opportunity also exists for everybody else. Now, you can't blame the Indian community if they are progressive by nature, okay? When you're not willing to do that. I've given examples. We have got a country with such a high unemployment rate. The majority is governing this country, but the majority are suffering. The majority are going hungry. So it's a disgrace. Why do you need specific policies in place to address the challenges that the majority of the poorest of the poor are facing in this country when the country is governed by the poor? Because you created a middle-class black community. And I gave you the number, approximately 17,500 who have benefited, okay, through those mechanisms and that you put in place to address the inequality. So only a handful of them benefited. What did they do for the masses? Nothing. But now you want to throw it back to the Indian community who strive, who make sacrifices to be where they are. We're not stopping anybody from doing that. I give you a good example. Why is somebody leaving Pakistan and India and Bangladesh and every other country and coming here to cut hair? To cut hair, Brother Shepherd, are you telling me somebody is going to leave their mothers, their fathers, their children, their all other family, friends, their environment, home, and everything and come to South Africa and they can't earn a living and they're starving? No, they're coming here because there's an opportunity to cut hair. So what is the problem with the locals deciding to take up being a barber and cutting hair? If tomorrow every foreigner leave this country, you won't be able to have a haircut. So the opportunities are there. The others take it. Some don't take it. Now, whose fault is it if you don't take it? So don't attack the Indians because you failed to take up the opportunity. Or there are people amongst you who've taken up, benefited themselves and given back, haven't given anything back to society. That's the problem we're facing.
Full marks to you, Ahmed. And also looking at a message from Rashid. He says, Assalamu alaikum, brothers. I'm listening to you from Israel. Beautiful, Marco Sahaba, Jazakallah khair for consciously connected. Ahmed, I want to tell you that I heard stories and I've read stories that the Zama-Zamas are so heavily armed that if they were pitted against the South African Defence Force, they'll walk them in 1 hour. Is there any truth in that? And if that's the scenario, I am very, very afraid of this country. Perhaps the Zama-Zamas will have a coup d'etat soon. I don't know whether to laugh or cry there, Ahmed. Your thoughts?
Let me respond with some humor in it, my brother. They will make kebab of them. That's basically what they will do of it. The Zama-Zamas are military trained. Brother Shepard, let me tell you, the South African army will not be able to infiltrate those mines and how in those mine shafts and things. They're not. Our police force is a no-no. They've admitted that they don't. They were not trained to do those things. Our defense forces neither have got the expertise or the skills to be able to do that. In fact, they don't even have the ammunition. They don't have the equipment. They are borrowing from each other. That is what they are doing. So right now, I want to tell you the Zama-Zamas are so well trained that indeed they will walk all over our people. That is why I think what you need is a coordinated approach where the South African police, the army, the security companies, and perhaps, to be honest with you, might need the assistance of the Russians or somebody else to come and assist you, yeah, to be able, who've got experience in illegal mining, because illegal mining has generally been a norm all over the world. It's just that they've handled it differently. But in South Africa, clearly I can tell you right now, our defense force on its own will not be able to do it. I remember we deployed the defense force with the police in the Cape Flats to deal with drugs and gangsterism and everything. Let me tell you what they were doing, Brother Shepard. The police were working in isolation to the defense force, so both of them were doing their own thing. No, not coming together, no coordination. And what do you think the defense force were doing? Standing on the roadside and giving tickets for unlicensed vehicles and poor tires and things. That's basically what they were doing. That's the report we got from them when we went to interview them. So really, they don't have what it takes.
Yeah, absolutely brilliant. Yeah, you talk about kebab and roti, and I'll say we'll have it with some salad there, lots of carrot and some onions diced there, and a lot of green chilies, and we'll put some vinegar and salt and chow it. But you know, on a more serious note, you look at the Zama-Zamas. They're moving around with bags and bags of money. I believe they got a lot of gold, too, in the boots of their cars, and they're driving luxury sedans. And whenever there's a case against them, they have a lawyer, which they pay him, you know, hundreds and thousands of rands at a time. And they got lots of boodle. Talk to us about that, Ahmed.
Well, the problem starts with your Department of Police. Your minister does not think there's anything wrong with anybody coming with bags of cash and paying for your bail for all the suspects that have been granted bail. He thinks there's no law they're breaking. He gives an example, and we almost had a one-on-one the other day. And he says, no, but even taxi owners go and pay for buying when they buy vehicles. So he knows so much because I guess that's the life he leads. The fact of the matter is even a taxi owner, if he's taking 150 or 500,000 in cash to go and buy a taxi, he's got to answer where he's got that money from. Anything over, I think, 20 or 25,000 rand that is deposited into your account, the bank will come back because FICA is the one you have to report to and tell you where the money came from. There is regulations in place. The minister doesn't seem to know anything about it. And what was the point I was trying to get at there, Brother Shepherd? The point I was trying to get at, you don't know who the kingpins are, right? But there is a lawyer who comes with the money, and I'm told this lawyer virtually lives at court. He's paying all the bail for the suspect. He represents them all at about 250,000 rand at a time, okay? And he's got it in cash. Don't you believe that we have a right by virtue of the fact even the court that is receiving the money is supposed to report to FICA? We received this and we got it from so-and-so. So so-and-so has got to answer. I remember one day I deposited 22,000 or something into my account, and my bank wrote back to me to ask me, that Fika wants an explanation for it, and I had to give an explanation for it. So it, the regulations are there, but if your minister of law enforcement in the country does not know and understand that, in fact, you are not allowed to carry large sums of cash, even though you may want to deal with the cash, but you have to report. There's mechanisms in place. And all I'm saying, by getting this person to tell you where these monies are coming from, getting him to account, you will might be able to get to the kingpin of who is giving him the money. And why would you, in the 21st century, with all the technology we have with banks, choose to carry hundreds of 250,000 at a time, regularly, to the court? You yourself are becoming a high risk if you're carrying those money. People are carrying 2,000 or 100 and they're getting robbed. And here you are carrying this. Who does not know that this lawyer is carrying large sums of money every time he goes to court and has not been attacked yet? So why would you want to do that, Brother Shepherd? There has to be some money laundering taking place for you not to want to ensure there's a link that is going to direct you to who the kingpin is. And that's exactly what I'm asking him to do. To get to the kingpin, get to who's giving this lawyer the money, where that person is getting the money from, and follow the trail. If it happened once, I can understand. It's a norm, Brother Shepherd. Norm. It's happening all the time from what we've been told.
I tell you, I'm absolutely brilliant. We have run out of time because of Juzah Day, the Quran is coming up. You have a beautiful, lovely day ahead. We'll talk to you soon. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Wa alaikum salam wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Your call?
Yes, sir. I can tell you 55 minutes uninterrupted will be the Noble Quran. And also I can tell Lucky, Jazakallah Khaira. Thank you very much for brilliant engineering and to all of you sent in messages. Big Jazakallah Khaira to you, and you. Also, don't forget, Mufti A.K. Hussein comes on. He's a popular Q&A from 2 to 4 p.m. From the team and I, till we meet you again, we bid you assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Marcus Sahaba, the voice of Ahl Sunnah wal Jama'ah.